Well, hey there. It's June 27th, 2007, and you're listening to Debs, the Horoscopes Lady, right here on BBS Radio. Oh, goodness, today I am so excited. I truly, truly am. The guest that we have today, her name is Nita Popley, and she hosted this incredible show, Vivid Barté. Barté, she'll correct me in a minute, for 25 years in the Washington, D.C. area. And I used to listen to her way back when. And when I ran into her a couple of years ago, I was, you sort of know someone's voice, but you're not quite sure. And when, you know, she told me who she was, like, oh, my gosh, you know. Yeah, she did wonderful things, and you'll be hearing about her from her in a minute. Let me see. I do want to mention this is a sidereal radio show. That means we look at the planets against the constellations, not the seasons. And what does that mean? That means right now the sun is in 11 degrees of Gemini. Yes, I know we had the summer solstice last week. I know it's darn, well, it's darn hot here. I don't know what it's like where you are, but the sun is still in the constellation Gemini. It is not in the constellation Cancer. However, Venus is, and pretty much anywhere on the North American continent tonight, shortly after sunset, you can see Venus up in the sky. She is bright. She is beautiful. And right next to her, you'll see a faint, faint star, if your eyes are as old as mine at any rate, and you'll see Saturn right next to her. They're right up there together. Well, let me see else. The other thing I wanted to mention was Angel, the People Whisperer, will be coming on air right after me on July 18th. He'll be on at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. Angel is also a sidereal astrologer that I interviewed back in February, and he's quite a hoot. He's a very entertaining man. I hope after you listen to this show on the 18th, you will stay in to listen to him. And the last little bit of news I have, if you're living in California, in July, you'll be able to go to any public library in the state of California and get a copy or have them get a copy to you of Gift Giving by the Stars. And that is my book on, it's a practical application of astrology on how to give gifts to anybody. But every library in California will have copies of that. And I'm darn excited. I hope you go and avail yourself. All right, our guest today, Nita Popley, like I said, she had over 25 years experience in radio and television. She has hosted America's longest-running Hindi radio program, Vivid Barté, in the Washington, D.C. area. And it was an amazing show that I loved listening to. She had music, it had customs, it had news, it had interviews. It was, even though I am not Indian myself, I love listening to it, absolutely love listening to it, and she was recently interviewed as a guest on CNN television regarding, you know, her program. She is married to Dr. Chris Popley. He is a general family dentist in Virginia and the mom of two lovely children that my child goes to school with, so we've made full circle here. Nita, how are you today?
Fine, thanks, Deb. It's a pleasure to be on your program. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm tickled to death. Could not be, you know, you can hear it. I sound like a kid, you know. It's like I'm that excited about it because I hear you.
Yeah, and I love your intro. That was really very, very thoughtful. Thank you. I enjoyed doing the program. That's one thing. Just like I'm listening to you doing the program, you can hear the, you know, the energy, and it's just so positive, and it's nice to hear that. Nice to hear that in your voice.
Okay, well, good. Well, let me start out by asking you, how did you get into radio, doing what you do? And I understand you work with your mom, so,
yeah.
You know, to talk about that.
That's an excellent question. You know, we started the program back in 1981, so I actually had just graduated from high school, and my parents weren't even thinking about me as being a potential host on a program. My mother had been a professional broadcaster with the Voice of America Hindi service for, at that time, about 25 years. And she wanted to do a public service Hindi radio program so that my generation would be in touch with the Hindi language and would preserve their cultural heritage and the customs of India. So she was basically looking to educate my generation and subsequent generations with language. So she started the program, but they weren't so sure about me because I was young. And the minute they heard my voice on the air, they thought, wow, she really knows what she's doing. And so I wasn't the original co-host. They had a gentleman. And slowly but surely, I kind of weaved my way in and made myself, the co-host of the show. And it just took off from there. And then it's become what I would term as a labor of love, something that you just enjoy doing. And then it becomes a part of your identity, a part of who you are. But it also reconnects you back to your own community and your roots, and that's how we got started in this.
You did that, and you also did television. You want to talk about that for just briefly? Yeah.
Well, we started a television program. The first program in the Washington area was about 1985, I think, shortly after the radio. And again, as a public service. The community needed to have someone anchor the news and tell about our community, and I volunteered to do it. And slowly but surely, that also evolved into a talk show segment where we started interviewing people within our own community and calling it In Conversation to let people know about other people who were becoming successful in whatever it was that they did. So, for example, in the 90s, the IT professionals sort of took off, with the dot-com industry and people with all these high-tech companies. So we started interviewing CEOs, but then we also interviewed a lot of authors because a lot of Indian-American authors came to the forefront with some interesting books like Jhumpa Lahiri. You may have heard of the book The Namesake, which recently became a movie.
Yes, I have.
So we've done a lot of interviews with very interesting people. But basically, the main focus was, of course, that there should be something that connects them back to Indian culture and our Indian American identity.
Yeah, one of the things, our listeners just heard that now, but I loved so much about listening to your show is that it was positive and it did feature the best and the brightest, and it encouraged people. It's one of the reasons I love doing BBS radio. If you listen to the other stations, it's not the shock jock. It's not ugly. I'm such a Southern girl. I don't know what else to say. It's just not ugly. It is positive and it is uplifting, and it makes you get up and say, okay, yeah, I'm proud to be part of the human race, and let's see what I can do today. One of the things, I know you did not have astrology as part of your programming, and I'm not asking you to speak for every single Indian who's living in India, because you were born here in the States, weren't you?
Yes, I was, yeah.
Yes, and raised in the States. Of course, your mom wasn't your, are you first generation? That would be considered first generation.
Yeah, I guess it would be called first generation, because I was first generation born in the U.S.
U.S.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about, because it is so different, how does the average person use astrology in India?
To the best of my knowledge. That's a really interesting question because, to the best of my knowledge, from what I'm aware of and what I, know through our own, going to the temple and dealing with, people within the community, or seeing, for example, the advertisements that come out from the journals in our community, I would have to say that there's a strong prevalence of astrology because, as you know from your own studies, that Vedic astrology dates back, to BC. It's just something that has always been around and something that's always been featured prominently before a decision or any kind of important life decision is made. You revert back to what do the stars say. So I think it's, it has a very strong prevalence. And for that matter, I think I'd go one step further and say that Indian Americans, even today, while there may not be too many that focus, on their daily lives, I think when it comes to a big momentous occasion in their life, they will resort to their birth chart and try to find out as much information as possible before making any type of major move in their life.
I want to interject here with this small story. When I was working when I was guest for originally for Kids Online Radio, this lovely young intern who's Indian American, but born here, same as you, first generation. Her parents, of course, had, come up with charts, and they said, we were not going to force you to have a marriage, but this is who we'd like you to marry. And they had introduced him and whatnot, and he had been born here also. And she, of course, was in love with this, dashing young thing, and she asked me to look at the charts. And I looked at them, and I said, the young man your parents have picked out. He's good, he's solid, he's steady. You all have a lot to talk about. You have a lot that you agree with. And she said, yeah, but there's no spark. And I kind of cracked up because I thought that's so American. Because the other guy had plenty of spark, but I says, you know, this guy here is not as steady. He doesn't care about, you know, he wants to go have adventures, which is lovely when you're young, but not so lovely when you're in your 40s and 50s. And you're going to have, you know, your parents said, you know, you can do whatever you want, but you're going to have completely different experiences with those two. You know, if I was your mom, I'd go for the other kid. I'd go for the first kid because right. you want your child, your kid to be taken care of and your grandchildren to be taken care of. Do you find, now you said, you know, big life things, but do you find first, second, third generation Indian Americans still looking at that or turning their backs to it because they don't want to be considered either superstitious or they want to be American, which is a good thing. You know, you're living here. What do you think, or what have you seen?
I'm not an expert, but just looking at it from the standpoint of just the makeup of our society in general, there's always going to be like a 50-50 cross of how people view any type of issue. So I guess second and third generation, there would be some that are definitely interested in finding out the horoscope and the astrology chart to make sure that it matches and that they are going to be a compatible couple. And then there probably are those, the few out there that will say, no, I'm turning my back on it and I don't believe in it because it's superstitious, you know, humbug or whatever. But the story that you just relayed, I would have loved to have benefited from something like that because I think that's important. Now, as far as, you know, I can look at my own situation and comment that even when I was getting married, I know my parents didn't put stock in doing a matching of the horoscopes or astrology charts, but my husband's parents did. And apparently, you know, they had made sure that everything was okay before we got married, approaching an astrologer in India, their Indian family astrologer. So I think people still do put stock in that stuff.
Yeah, because I wanted to ask you, you know, how did you meet your husband? How did you meet him?
Oh,
and then you had the in-laws check you out. So, I mean,
yeah.
I understand that.
Yeah. You know, we didn't actually have the traditional, the families weren't the ones actually that set us up. We more or less found each other on our own. But we both come from very conservative backgrounds. So we did go through that semi-arranged process where we weren't going to, get married until our parents had approved entirely. We wanted to make sure that that both families were, were in agreement, and they were. So we were fortunate.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, we were
that's
fortunate in that sense. But it wasn't a traditional arranged marriage. But those aren't bad either because I think that like you mentioned about the story about the parents checking out the background. That's really important because that way you know for sure.
Yeah, it is important. I think a lot of Americans, non-Hindi Americans, obviously,
mm-hmm.
The only thing we know about arranged marriages is what we've seen in Bend It Like Beckham, and I'm trying to think of the other one, Bride and Prejudice.
Bride and Prejudice,
You know, I think that's the only thing most, you know, Americans think, and people say, oh, how awful, and I'm thinking, how awful what? I mean, you know, finding out what it's part of, for me, and I'm expecting to hear some callers call up and complain about it.
I know.
Part of it for me is that whole village to raise a child thing.
Right.
You want to make sure people are compatible. Why not? You know, and when you're 18, compatible doesn't have the same ring as when you're, you know, 30 or another age. So,
certainly.
You know,
you
I really
have
admit my daughter.
Fly.
Yeah. Well, it
you
does.
Still have
my daughter. I'm sorry, what?
I said you can still have the sparks fly, though. I mean, it's nothing, you know.
Oh!
It's funny because I know in our case, too, I remember saying to my parents, yeah, but the sparks are there. I mean, I always wanted to have sparks fly. They are flying. So,
I love that. Compatible does not mean dull. I think that's where a lot of people think compatible means dull.
Exactly.
No, it doesn't. You know, and some people are, you know, they're outdoors people and they want to go do stuff outdoors.
Right,
other people,
right.
You know, so that's what I'm talking about, that type of compatibility.
Sure.
And I fully admit, and then I'll get off of this subject, my kid's not going to, my daughter's not going to date anybody unless I've seen the guy's chart. Now, of course, she can say, yes, my mom is an astrologer.
Uh-huh.
she wants to know your birth information, you know, and I could just see her now. It's like, okay, you know, it, but I was brought up, you know, my parents wanted to meet the parents of the, not just the boy I was dating, but the kids I was out with.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's being involved in your children's life.
Yes.
Are you going to say, of course, your children might, I don't know if they're going to be, of course, they'll be listening to this at some point.
Yeah.
Are you going to check out the birth chart? That's what the question I want to know.
Yeah, you know, I would probably, that's a really good question because it's kind of early for me to even think of that. But, I probably would want to know, at least for marriage sake, yes. I think there's no harm in it because, you know, just like with that, the intern that worked with you, I think that makes a big difference. And it helps to know, you know, whether it's going to be a good relationship or not. And if there are two people, definitely I think it helps.
Yeah. I'll get off the romantic stuff for a while. the government of India licenses their astrologers. I mean, you literally have to go through a program, you know, education and whatnot, and take a test and prove that you are, you know, adept at this. And so does France. I believe France does also. And the closest thing we have here, I've ever had here, to open government involvement is that Nancy Reagan admitting she had an astrologer. Now, astrologers are not classified in most states the same as palmist or tarot readers. They're not considered
right.
fortune tellers.
Sure.
So that here in Virginia protects me a little bit because there's high license fees for what they call fortune tellers, and astrologers are not considered fortune tellers. Do you have any opinion, and I know it's, I'm just asking your opinion, on whether it has a positive or negative effect having legal status for astrologers?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I've never actually, I didn't even know that, you know, that they do have licensing, for example, in India or even in France. But I think that's pretty good that they do, actually, because that gives it more credibility, for one. Two, I think it's great from a consumer standpoint because, you know, it's giving consumers some sort of, you know, letting them know that there are regulatory guidelines that the government has put in place, and so that it's a practice that's governed by rules and regulations, and I think it's a good idea. It's kind of sad actually that we don't have some sort of ruling in place here in Virginia or in the U.S., for example. Because I think it helps. It helps to keep it regulated, and I think it, overall for the economy, it means it would be good.
I know there's a couple of astrology schools here, but you know who sets those up? You know who's, you know, what does that mean if you pass? Have a license help, and it has. You know, we've had our share of philanderers. I mean, that's the polite way to put it in the astrological field.
Yeah.
One of the things, and I don't think you'd hear this so much in, you know, Hindi society is, you know, you're my soulmate because my moon and your, you know, Venus conjunct. And somebody came to me once, a client, and said, well, this guy says we're soulmates. And I said, look, you have a conjunction with somebody's moon in your Venus every single month. It happens every single month. How does that make you soulmates? You know, it was just a come-on line. It was a pickup line, which makes all of us look bad.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of like, which you couldn't do as easily at any rate, I think, if we had some sort of... Of course, I'm not suggesting this administration take on any sort of government regulation of us. Wait till they're long gone. But, you know, it's different. I think we're treated different as opposed to the astrologers in France and the ones in India because, you know, if the government will give you a license for it, it does give it a legitimacy.
Exactly.
I
just look at it from a consumer standpoint. I mean, that's how I would approach it, that as a consumer, if I'm trying to determine if this is a service that I want to pursue, I want to make sure that the person I'm going to is knowledgeable and they have studied in the area that they are practicing and, you know, that they can make sound judgments or at least, you know, they went through some sort of training process that's accredited and that there is some sort of government regulation. I think it gives it legitimacy, it gives it credibility, but more importantly, it may be a reflection of how society also views that particular field, because if you look at India or France, it could be that they're more spiritual or more, you know, they believe in the stars, they believe in the, the astrology chart. So I don't know if that's a reflection of society in general, and that maybe that's something that we will evolve towards but haven't gotten there yet. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know either, but I just wanted to hear your opinion on that. Also,
yeah.
Want to hear about your dad. He started the first Indian. I mean, you've already said, you know, you actually come from quite an illustrious background as far as journalism is concerned.
Yeah, I guess that's, but it was more as a public service. I don't think anything, you know, was because there's actually, you know, I mean, journalism is in the blood, but it's more because of an interest and a passion than anything else.
Yeah, but isn't that the best way to have it?
Yes.
You know, that to
I
me it
so.
Is. That's the best
that
reason to do it. And, you know, I would much rather see somebody, well, anyway, and you do can become successful as opposed to saying, okay, I pick this because it's going to make money. You know, pick something
right.
because you have a passion for it, and then you can make money.
Exactly.
You know, I don't have problems with people making money, but no, I think that's lovely. So, but tell us about your dad's first Indian newspaper in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah. Well, again, that too. I don't know. It just so happened the inaugural issue came out when and this was. I'm trying to think. It's probably around 84, 85. The then Prime Minister of India, Rajiv Gandhi, was coming to Washington, D.C., and so our first issue came out around that time, timed with his visit. And so it was a big hit because there was no newspaper in the Washington metro area covering our Indian-American community. So it really was a big deal to have a newspaper out. And the timing of it was perfect. So I remember we actually went to you know, the press conferences and to the White House events when the Prime Minister was in town. So we have a lovely photograph of my dad actually presenting the Prime Minister with the first issue of the newspaper. So, you know, it was. I think the timing of the newspaper at that time was good, and it was a hit. But again, it's one of those things that you mentioned about the financial issue. You can have a passion for broadcasting or for journalism, or print journalism, or any other type of media, but having it make money is another issue altogether because you have to have support from the community financially, and that means advertising dollars.
Right. Yeah, I got that. You know.
Yeah.
So, but it did have a good long run, didn't it?
It did.
Yeah.
It did. And then of course, then actually we ended up selling it, and the management it changed names and was taken over after I think about 12 years or so.
12 years. Okay. And it had, you know, it had news. It had, I'm sure, did it have recipes? I mean, what type
of
recipes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, you know what? It actually had an astrology column as well.
You know that's where I was heading. I was going to skirt around the issue.
Yeah, yeah. I knew that's where you were headed. You know, it had an interesting one, too, because just like here, everyone, I think, has a tendency to look to the astrology page just to see, well, what's my horoscope for today? And, you know, sure enough, that paper had it as well, and I think it was popular.
That's it, and of course it would have been in sidereal. It would have been, Vedic astrology.
Vedic, yes, it was Vedic astrology.
Yeah, Vedic, which is what I do, except I don't do Vedic. And let me tell the listeners the difference between right now between Vedic and sidereal astrology. Vedic astrology is also based on the constellations. The same zodiac is used. There are slight mathematical differences between north and south. Yeah, but they're very slight, and it's just there's slight math differences. They're based on the constellations, and also and when the houses astrologers talk about houses being the 12 sort of stages of your daily life. You know, how you have relationships, how you have health, how you have how you're out and about in the career, various parts. It's what makes a chart look like more of a piece of pie over here, the way we slice it up. Those are whole sign houses, meaning each constellation, which has 30 degrees, is a house. That's the way the Hindus do it. The sidereals do it. We use the same zodiac. Some of us, and we're in the West, some of us use those whole sign house systems. I do that because I find they work brilliantly. Others, like the guest I had on 2 weeks ago, he uses what's called the Campana system. We have others that use the Kokao system, which is a lot more fancy math. I think simple, for me, simple is best. the tropical system, which is what most people are now doing in the West, and what I am doing my darndest to change, and I admit that freely, is based on the seasons. First day of spring is the first day of Aries. First day of summer is the first day of Cancer, regardless of where the sun is. It has nothing to do with the position of the sun. So that's the difference. The Hindu, they have different relationships with their parents, with their government, with opportunities that they have. So some of the houses' meanings are different, and the interpretations are different. But basically, I can talk to any Hindu in the world in astrology, and we know what each other's saying. It's the same language, which is quite nice, actually. And you are listening to BBSRadio.com right here over the Internet. All right, back to the newspaper here. Now, your cousins, your aunts, you were just saying, you know, everybody reads the daily horoscopes. Does it matter to them that they're reading tropical signs, or do they, in their mind, flip back and read the sign that they are in Vedic?
You know, that's a really good question. I don't know. I'm not sure about that, but I think it's always, you know, just curiosity. You want to see what's going to, you know, what's your daily horoscope going to be. I don't know
Let me have, Nita, you don't have to give me all your...
Yeah.
You don't have to give me all your information on the air, but let me have your birth date, and I'll see where you are sidereally and tropically and ask you which one you read.
Oh, okay.
Because you may read just what's available in the newspaper.
That's all I do. I mean, I don't know of any others.
Well, let me have your birthday.
It's October 19.
Okay, well, I really don't even need the year, just to tell you that. Okay, so you'd be reading Libra. Now, what do you normally read?
Yeah, I normally read that.
Okay, so you're good to go with there. All right, that's always good. Because you're in that crossover period. It's like I'm a Taurus either way. I'm a Taurus in either zodiac, because there's like 1 week out of four where
exactly
the zodiacs are the same.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they're 23 degrees different. If anyone out there is interested in finding out what their sidereal zodiac is, or their Vedic zodiac, however you want to say it, horoscope, is you can go to mybirthchart.com, and there's a free weekly horoscope up there in sidereal or Vedic, as you choose to say it. Let me see. I had some other questions. Yeah, I was going to mention that. My bank manager cracks me up, because my bank manager is, she was born in India. Her children were born here, and her daughter reads the newspaper horoscopes, and it drives my bank manager insane, because she says, that cannot possibly, it's not even the right sign. It's not even looking at the right sign. So she's obviously one of those that has, you know, they're not born in that 1 week, a month, where it's the same.
Yeah,
let me see. Business relations.
That could drive anybody crazy. I was just thinking about that you know, it is good to know what the differences are. And that's why we'd have to turn to someone like you, as a professional who knows what they're talking about and understands how all of this works. Because otherwise, you know, it's rather confusing not knowing where do I fall.
It is confusing, and particularly when you've been told one thing, you know, all your life by the major newspapers and whatnot, and and then of course we have upstarts that come and say, no, that's not where the sun really is. So actually, I'm pretty darn sympathetic for people to say what, you know, and try to calm them down. Okay, let me ask you about business relationships and timing for business decisions. That's the main focus of my practice. That's what I prefer doing. I know I spent a lot of time earlier asking you about the relationship aspect, only because that's one of the most blatant and fascinating things. Somebody will come and say, okay, are we compatible? And I'm thinking, oh, you've been dating for how long? And you don't know the answer to that question? As opposed to coming and say, okay, I have a pool of people to pick from. Who am I going to be the most compatible with, for someone who wants to get serious? But business relationships and, you know, timing for business decisions, you know, that's the main focus of my practice. And I'm wondering, do you know any first, second, third generation Indian Americans that use astrology for this, or is it too old-fashioned for them?
You know, I've read so many articles, actually, in Indian journals. Now, these are journals from India, about the very rich and famous elite businessmen in India who are you know, listed in the Forbes Fortune 500 listings. And I, when I see those, I'm always impressed to find out when they do an interview with the CEO, they'll actually resort back and say, I use astrology, or I use Vastu Shastra, which is, you know, the placement of you know, various elements in your home, they, or,
right,
or your business, that they use all of that to make decisions, or to make sure that everything is in harmony and in you know, everything lines up correctly, and so that if there is a major merger or an acquisition that they want to make, then they will consult the charts, and they will deal with a professional astrologist to determine if this is the right day, or this is the right time or moment to make the move. So, yeah, I do believe that there are a lot of professionals out there that rely on astrology.
Okay. You just mentioned, was it Astra Shasta?
Vastu Shastra, which is
Vastu.
Like Feng Shui. It's like Feng Shui.
I was going to say, it is the Indian version of Feng Shui.
Yeah.
I know it's a little off the topic of astrology, but it is fascinating and pronounced. I know I've seen the word. I am sorry. I am from Southern Maryland, and I am cursed forever with, you know, I have this limited speech ability, which is not bad. I mean, I can talk, but
you're doing fine, Deb.
You know, it's like, okay, I can do these words, you know. Please talk about it for a couple of minutes.
Well, I'm actually not, you know, not so familiar. I just know that it's basically just like the feng shui idea, that it deals with placement of furniture or placement of various elements like water, fire. You know, that you should have harmony and peace in your home environment, but also in your business environment. So I've seen seen business offices actually revamped in order to be more in harmony, or have zones of area where it's more peaceful. Or in your home, you have like a zone of tranquility, which is your meditation area. But Vastu Shastra is pretty prominent for businessmen as far as how should the building be set up, or how should the office entrance be set up, so that the clients feel more comfortable, or so that business is more successful. But I really don't know too much about, you know, the actual, you know, what's done, because I think they do use a Vedic astrologer in those type of situations.
There are. That is another difference between Vedic astrologers and even sidereal astrologers, even though we use the same zodiac. Every time I've met a Hindu priest and I've been introduced to an astrologer, he'll put out his palm for me, and it's like, I'll show you yours if you show me. Yeah, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. And I have to say, you know, palmistry is an entirely different field here.
Right.
It's not one and the same. And the Hindus have, astrologers have at least a dozen different charts they can look at, calculated from different positions for one person's birth chart. It is fascinating, and I have not delved into that because I'm not a Vedic astrologer. I'm a sidereal astrologer.
Right.
But, yes, I can see where they want to set up. If you were born, you know, if you're heavily wood, you know, maybe you want to be in that area of your home that,
right,
you know, it's got those earth qualities to it. Or I'm just going to say heavily earth. You'd have,
right,
you know, wood things or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, again, it's just... I think the licensing is the trick. You've got so much, it's like you have contractors here, and I'm thinking about them a lot these days, you know, with my roof and my ceilings and my electric and all that. I would not hire somebody who said, I don't care how cheap they were, you know, came in and said, oh, yeah, I can do that. I want to see a license.
Yeah.
I want to see where they have gone back and said, okay, I can do this. I have taken these courses. I have passed my apprenticeship, which to me is as important as the so-called education. It's like I want to know that they've had practice under somebody doing this, and they can do it. And I don't have to worry about, you know, my ceiling falling in or my roof caving back in or something. But we'll see. Nita lives in the same area I do, and we've had some terrible windstorms this spring. And I've had, with the trees, limbs breaking off down where I live, I've had one thing or another after my roof. And I thought I'd gotten squared away. And last week, we had a rainstorm here on Tuesday evening. I'm giving this for the benefit of my listeners. So I came in the office Wednesday morning, and there was rain pouring down through the electric sockets, which, because I'm up on the second floor here. And I thought, okay, got to do something about that. Turned everything off, emailed Don, said, please rerun a show. I'm taking, you know, essentially, I'm taking my child and getting out of the house until somebody comes in and looks at this, which is what I did. So, yes, I like the idea of the government giving some sort of test or validity. You know, it's like,
oh,
okay.
Definitely.
Yeah, this guy can do this.
Definitely.
You have an uncle and a cousin, I believe, in the jewelry trade.
Mm-hmm.
How do gemstones fit into Indian astrology? I did have James Braha, who actually brought Vedic astrology to the United States, 25 years ago, 30 years ago. And he mentioned it briefly on the show, and I have been, you know, certainly I'm capable in my practice, you know, to recommend birthstones to people, real birthstones, not just based on the month of their birth. But how do your uncle, your cousin, do they fit into this, or are they strictly ornamental jewelry? What do they do?
Well, you know, I think any a jeweler probably, you know, the best way to approach it is if an astrologer has told a client that you need to have a certain stone to wear on a certain finger or to wear anywhere, you know, like a necklace or an earring, but you need to have this particular gemstone on your person, then I know that they actually you know, will do their best to get the jewelry made. But I believe, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of times the astrologist will actually say there's a certain size that you have to wear. You know, like it should be between, you know, 1.5 centimeters or whatever. Or I mean, I don't know, but I believe that size matters as well. But that there are so many stones out there, and you deal with as well, that gemstones really are associated with the planets. And so, based on where your zodiac falls, your zodiac sign, then you would wear a certain gemstone to correlate with that.
You're more than welcome to, you know, give them a plug. What's the name of the business, and do they require an astrologer talking to people first, or do they
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
Yeah, because as jewelers, I know that they're certified jewelers, and it's Atlantic Gems in Silver Spring, Maryland. But they're fully aware of what stones mean and what they're worn for. But they would prefer that before, you know, giving it to a client, they'll say, you know, either someone should have recommended it for them, or if a client is asking them, can you recommend a stone for me? Because the sun is my sun sign, and so I'm a Leo. What's going to be the best stone for me? So then they might say, we'll get the stone for you, wear the ring or wear the jewelry for a couple of days, see what it does for you. Does it feel good? And then the client purchases based on the necessity, I guess.
I do just want to interject there just to make it clear for people that are listening. Just because you are a sun sign Leo, you may not need the stone specifically for Leo. You would possibly have the one for your rising sign or your ascendant. That may be a more predominant sign. So the Vedic gemstone, birthstone, is far more personal than you know, what we have here with is, okay, your birthstone is this because you were born in this month or under this sun sign, and we have a lot of these we need to sell. You know, it's a different attitude completely about that.
How do you do it, Deb? When you, like, with a client, how do you determine which stone might be suited?
Okay, well, first of all, anyone can wear the stone that's associated with their rising sign, no matter what that is. And we use all the original rulerships. We don't use any of the outer planets are just the outer planets. God love them, and they're social oriented, but they're not. One of the things that drive me the craziest, you know, an Aquarius will come up and say, oh, Uranus is my ruling planet. And I just cringe because I know that's what they've been told.
Right.
But, you know, it's like, no, Saturn is your ruling planet. And if callers want to call in next week or email me, you can email me at DeborahDillard@mybirthchart.com. You can follow the link on my BBS page, and that's another whole show to discuss that. But everyone can wear the stone associated with the constellation of their rising sign.
Well,
other than that,
mine. Uh-huh. I was going to say, like, using
mine as an example. I don't know what yours is, because I don't know. I would love to give an example, but I need your birth. I need more birth information, because you can't do it on just a day. Okay,
oh,
so you're October 19th.
Yeah.
What year?
63.
That's what I thought, actually. What time?
Oh, I don't want to do that on the air.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was thinking. You don't want to do that on the air. So I'll tell you what. I'm going to do, let's say somebody was born, let's say somebody was born right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And they're born here in Clifton, Virginia, which is where I am. And they've got Virgo rising. So if anyone born with Virgo rising, they can always wear an emerald. No matter what else is going on in their chart, at any time they can always wear an emerald because that's Virgo. It's Mercury ruled. That's what is associated with Virgo, Mercury. Now, the other thing I would look at is to see what are the relationships between the planets. If there is a planet, particularly a planet that that gives you good relationships or wealth or it's about your body. So I'm looking at the Venus or the Moon or Jupiter. If they are, and it's a very old-fashioned term, if they are under attack, if they are squared or opposed, or in Mars' case, 150 degrees away from either Mars or Saturn, they're considered weakened or under attack. Again, it's very old-fashioned, I guess, verbiage, but it's, you know, it works. So you put a little check mark there and say, okay, these planets need some help. The Sun is not, in Vedic astrology, not considered a great planet. It's hot, it's dry, it's way masculine. They prefer the Moon, which makes sense. If you live on, if you were raised in an area, I mean, this ought to work for Arizona, too. If you were raised in an area that is hot all the time and your crops aren't growing for a couple of months a year and the heat is oppressive, then the Sun is not necessarily your favorite planet. But the Moon, on the other hand, it's romantic, it's lovely. It's, you know, we'll take a nap during the hot part of the day and get back up. As the Moon starts to come up again. So the Moon can always usually stand to be strengthened, but not necessarily. It's a tough one. You don't want to strengthen the Moon if it's sitting next to a planet that is weak and you are overshadowing that other planet, particularly if it's Venus and you want, you know, Venus to do well. So you might need a stone for Venus instead of for the Moon. And then you have what's called in Hindu astrology or Vedic astrology, you have what's called dasa periods. There are certain periods of your life, different planets have strengths. And again, that's based on birth time. So during that planetary period, you can always wear that stone. The stones most people have trouble with are the stones that have to do with Mars and Saturn, unless, of course, you have a rising sign that's ruled by those planets. In Mars' case, that would be Aries or Scorpio, and Saturn, which in that case would be Capricorn and Aquarius. If you have those rising, you can always wear them. But again, this is sidereal rising signs. If you're in a Saturn or Mars dasa, you can wear the planets, the stones associated with that, and it's either coral or blue sapphire. Those are the first stones. But you don't want to necessarily wear those if it's not that time period. I have interesting, it sounds crazy with, okay, how can a stone affect you that strongly? And I think I liken it to like radio crystals. Remember way back when, you know, when you had crystals, in radio so you can receive the sound waves?
Signal.
And I think that's how the gemstones work. It's like by having it close to your body, you are more in tune through your own energies with, it's like a radio broadcasting station or a receiving station. You can receive, it's like an antenna, I guess. You can receive things that are beneficial to you more easily, just like, you know, if you've got a stone that's not so hot for you, and I'm leery to mention those stones because some of those stones are very good for some people. I had a woman, she was a client, I could not believe this. She had this incredible onyx bracelet. It was incredible. It was signed by, it was a Native American who had done the silversmithing on it, and she threw it into a pond. I said, what did you do that for? She said, well, this teacher she had just met on a $120 weekend, this teacher said, it's no good, that's a bad stone. And I looked at her, and my mouth dropped open. I said, let me get this right here. You pay $120 to go to some weekend seminar to some guy you had never heard of before but had great advertising. He looks at you on the bracelet that you have on, and he tells you to throw it in a pond, and you throw it in a pond. You've never had bad luck with that. Never. You can hear it in my voice. Why would you trust that? You know, Nita, it's like you said. The Vedic jewelers, what they'll do is they'll say, take the stone, wear it for a couple days. What kind of experiences happen? Do you feel calmer? Do you feel more intuitive? Do you feel just happier in general? Or are little things starting to go wrong?
Right.
If little things are starting to go wrong, you don't want that. In particular, for my daughter, one of the stones that she can wear is a yellow sapphire. So, you know, I got her one to wear around for her necklace. And, you know, kids are honest. You know, they'll tell you, yes, no, you know, rather, but, you know, it's pretty, and that's what she likes about it. But I watched her, and she was playing games, and it was dodgeball, and she's, like, ducking the ball, and she's doing stuff. And I said, did you see the ball coming? Did you see that? And she said, no, I just felt like I should move. So I know it's a good stone for her.
Yeah,
it's that specific, and it's that subtle. And, you know, do you want to, you know, get your child an expensive stone so she can play dodgeball? No. But I'd like to think, you know, it'll help her if she's walking across the street, and maybe it'll help her dodge a car. You know, like some sixth sense says, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't step off the curb right now, even if, you know, I've got a walk signal.
Yeah.
So that's how I use them. But it's specific. It's not, you know, it takes me a good 45 minutes just looking at somebody's chart to figure out which stones are the best, and then I can run the computer version to see for the rest of their life, you know, what stones are best for what time periods.
Because that could possibly change, too, that if you're going through a spell
does.
Or something, or if something's, you know, a different change in your life, then that could be affected.
It does. It absolutely does. You have some stones you can wear your entire life, like I said, the one that rules your rising sign. But the other stones will change throughout your life.
Yeah,
it's fascinating. It's one of the Vedic astrology things that I found absolutely fascinating. I do have one last question, and
sure.
You know, you don't have. When can we look forward to hearing you on the radio again?
Ah, that's a great question. I hope to have a program up and running again. You know, I'm trying to develop the website so that we can have the program on at least on the internet, and then find a station locally so that I can you know, begin broadcasting again, because I miss it, and I know my listenership over here in the Washington metro area misses it as well.
Yeah, and that is something I think over the years that, you know, people, like I said, I recognized your voice you know, from hearing you all those years. And when you say your name, it's like, wait a minute, I know this woman. And I know you probably still have people, you know, I hope I'm not embarrassing you, coming up, you know, at Temple and other places to say, gee, I wish you'd come back on.
Yeah, thank you. It's always nice. But that's what keeps us going, right? It's a labor of love. So, but then again, I believe also that it's in the stars. So when the timing is right, that's when you you strike, I guess.
Well, that is it. That is it. You know, and sometimes, you know, it is time to stop and do other things. You know, for a while and pull back, and then to you know, continue on again.
Yeah.
This radio show has absolutely nothing to. Well, it was a labor of love. Prairie Home Companion, I don't know if you had heard of that. It's started out west as National Public Radio.
Yeah,
no budget. Garrison Keillor started it. They had
exactly.
No budget.
Exactly.
Yeah, he wasn't getting paid. And it grew into, actually it got very kitschy for a while. It grew into this phenomenon. And I had been listening to it since way back when. And then it was time he quit. And I remember when he quit, it was in the 80s. And I was shocked. It was like the Valentine's Day. Like, he said he's done it long enough. Well, 2 years later, he was back on the air, part of which was because people missed him enough at that point that he felt, you know, there is enough listenership. And when he came back, he knew enough business things, saying, okay, this is a business. It's a labor of love, but it's definitely a business.
Exactly.
And, you know, now I think they're going to have to carry him out feet first because, you know, it is so popular.
It's so popular, exactly.
It's popular, and that's a big thing. You know, you started out talking about, you know, how the first radio show, of course, it was community service, and it was passionate. But it's mixing, the business with it. It's like, okay, it has to support itself.
Oh, yeah, I started out, exactly, the way I got on the program was they needed someone to do the commercials. And I said, fine, I'll write them and script them and, produce them, put them together with the music and whatever, and we'll see how I do. And the program was always live, so even with the live format, I did the commercials live as well. And so they were just floored that, wow, you know what you're doing, you enjoy it, so why not, become a regular part of this program. And like I said, it just took off. And, of course, it helped that I had my mom there with me as we were support for one another. So it we used to joke and say that it was Mother's Day for us every day.
Oh, how nice. That is nice. That really is. But you rolled your sleeves up. You saw what needed to be done, and you went and did it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a lot. And I guess I want to end up, kind of with that, only because, we're talking about the gemstones, and you know that I use them, that I describe them. But I never want people to think, okay, I can carry this rock in my pocket, and all life will become, simple and prosperous and the rest of that. You still have got to have goals, and you still have got to have enough energy to get up and make those things happen. And, you certainly did that, for all those years. And I thank you. I love listening to you. I thought it was just terrific, terrific. Okay, ma'am, well, unless you have anything
else. Well, thank you, Deb. I really enjoyed listening to you, too, and this has just been a wonderful experience. And you're so knowledgeable in this area that it's heartwarming, and it's something that I know, from my own sense, I'd have to say, it's certainly piqued my interest tremendously. But I'm sure for the listeners as well, if they're considering astrology, then this is you're definitely the right person to approach.
Well, thank you so very much. I appreciate that. All right, Nita, I will be talking to you later. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
No. Okay, the rest of BBS listeners, or you're listening to BBSradio.com over here on the Internet, broadcast out of beautiful Paradise, California. Where else? I want to mention that Mercury is still retrograde, and what that means does not mean the Earth stops. It does not mean your world stops. It does, however, mean that you should double-check all communications. You should get it in writing if you can, and then double-check the writing with a fine-tooth comb. I always like to play a game because I was in printing for 15 years, but I always like playing this game that says, spot the mistakes in the newspaper, and there will be plenty of them between now and Mercury will finally go direct on July 10th. So it'll be after the 4th of July. Hope you all don't have any mishaps there with sparklers. Use common sense, and that'll be next week, certainly a week from today. So Mercury is retrograde. It's still in Gemini. You cannot see it because it's too close to the sun right now. Said shortly after nightfall, you can see Venus up in the sky. She's absolutely gorgeous at 25 degrees of Cancer, and Saturn's in Cancer also. If you are a sidereal Cancer, that means you were born somewhere around July 16th to August 16th, but there are overlap dates there. So anyway, but July 16th to August 16th, you have 5 more days where you're just, the only way to put it, you're looking adorable. You're looking absolutely adorable. So if you can get your picture taken, if you need a new driver's license, if you need your passport done, if you need something like that, go get your picture taken. Believe me, because 2 weeks after that, you'll say, well, I look okay, but the spark isn't quite as sparky, I should say. Anytime Venus passes through your constellation that your sun was in when you were born, there's just, I don't care if, you can be having a bad hair day, and you'll still look adorable when Venus is passing through that constellation. The moon tonight is going to be in Scorpio. It's not quite a full moon. You got 2 more days for that. It will be full in Sagittarius then, so it'll be absolutely gorgeous out there. For those who are watching the Galactic Center, I don't usually bother with that because it's way too far away. It'll be closing in on that, but I know a lot of you are watching the Moon and Pluto being conjunct at the Galactic Center now. I said it's not one of my concerns, but I'm letting you know that'll be coming up in a couple days. What else? I had a couple other things I wanted to tidy up here before I got off the air in one more minute. Again, Angel, People Whisper, will be on right after me, July 18th at 11 a.m. on Pacific Time. Please give him a listen. And I'd also like to mention one more time that Gift Giving by the Stars will be available in California libraries probably in the next 2 to 3 weeks, depending on where you live. But if you ask for it, Gift Giving by the Stars by Deborah Dillard, they can get it to you if it's not exactly in your library, but it will be in all the branches or available to all the branches in the next 2 weeks. Well, you've been listening to Deborah Dillard. I'm sorry, Deb's the Horoscopes Lady, whose real name is Deborah Dillard, on BBSRadio.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye now.